Good morning, everyone. My name is Ajaz Hussain, and I have the privilege to be with a number of experts who will be able to talk to you about the future and predict the future of blockchain and healthcare technology. And I am, in one sense, an outsider, excited to be part of this narrative and discussion to learn as much as to probe where we are going. So let's get started. May I ask my colleagues to introduce themselves one by one and share with us what do they see as the future of blockchain technology in healthcare?
Sure. You want me to start? Okay.
Yes, please. Yes, please.
Yeah, my name is Mohan Venkatraman. I'm a freelance consultant and advisory right now. But in my past life, I was seriously involved in building a blockchain practice for a consulting firm. And as part of that, I was focused on multiple industries. But specifically for this conversation in the healthcare space, I was engaged in a number of blockchain-enabled solutions in the industry space. Solutions such as the utilization of decentralized identity, a product that I was engaged with for which we even have a patent, Trust Your Supplier, which essentially looks at how do you trust a supplier before you start doing business. For example, pharmaceutical companies do businesses with a number of tier one suppliers. How do you trust them? So blockchain-enabled trust. In addition to that, I've also looked at how claims in the insurance space are managed, as well as how can you reduce the revenue cycle management. So most of my predictions are based on this particular experience, and I'm currently engaged in a few projects, and it is actually proving to be true that there are a lot of projects in the industry that are focused on optimizing legacy business processes, especially in the revenue cycle management process, as well as claims optimization, reduction in cost. So, with that, I'm just going to pass on to my colleague on the right.
Good. Thank you.
Maybe me. Yes, hello everyone. I'm Jim Nasser. I'm the CEO at Acor. We are product builders. We have been building software in the healthcare innovation space, particularly public health analytics, public health intelligence for many years now. And also, we have been using blockchain and decentralized technologies, not just public blockchains, but some other certainly very modern cryptography as part of what we're doing. Really, we consider decentralized technologies as a principle for building, excuse me, for building software and really in many ways the ideas are around two kind of key concepts. One is around how do we give agency to patients so they can share their data, they can see what's happening with their health data, and it's all done with some degree of transparency, yet being privacy preserved and things like this. But then the other side is all to do with really population level proof of action, like proving that certain things happen or didn't happen, and having cryptographic proof. So that's really kind of in general what we do. In terms of just some other things that I do, I also lead the Coalition for Decentralized Health and Life Sciences, and as part of that is really an industry group. We get together and we are largely looking at what is happening, real life use cases with decentralized healthcare and specifically decentralized science, which is the area that I had some predictions around. So that's really generally speaking, that's the background, and yeah, looking forward to our conversation.
Thank you, Jim.
I guess I'll jump in next. Michael Dersham, AKA Dersh, CEO of Apeiron. We're a global health tech fintech company, US-based just outside of Philadelphia, globally based in the jurisdiction of Bermuda. Just a little bit on my background. I've been building companies in the greater healthcare and pharma space since my 20s, so not to date myself, but quite a long time. And have pretty good feeling on this, on the companies that we've been associated with, everything from operation and distribution companies, biotech startups, licensing out of labs, federal labs and universities. We started Apeiron now, I guess, close to 7 years ago, and it was all around, and at that time, blockchain was not in existence, but we embraced it quite heavily as you know, as we came into looking at the dysfunction that happens in this whole $11 trillion medical commerce healthcare space, where there's three stakeholders that make that flywheel go around, which are patients, payers, and providers. And now we're a leader in showing real use cases and deployment around those three aspects of the dysfunction in healthcare payments, how we can use digital assets around that, patient identity, and now digital identity. And then on the provider side, we created the first ever.
Did we just freeze?
The
I think
first.
we lost a few seconds of your introduction. Could we just
I
hit the
did.
last portion?
Sorry about that. It's a little cold here outside of Philly. Maybe it froze our
It
internet, as it is everywhere in the greater
is.
Northeast, it seems. So what I was saying is that, we've created it and have deployed on chain now in three continents, driving some of our solutions, and now really look at kind of the convergence and confluence between blockchain and AI and what that means, not only from continued our use cases, but as we said earlier, particularly around the regulatory end of this, and what it means with all these technologies that are really a tsunami that's happening.
Yeah, no, definitely. Thank you. John?
So my name is John Riley. I am the chief of emerging tech for a company called Impactify. What we focus on is companies that are coming to the U.S. market with different technologies, and I help qualify if that technology is a fit. Also, so my background briefly, been in software application space about 25 years now. Worked for companies like Oracle, SAP, consulting services, user adoption of emerging technology, digital transformation. And I think when I've been seeing what's been going on, right, with emerging tech, especially with blockchain, I think it started there where the disruption came. But then you have, like Dersh was saying, AI and now quantum, right? So I think in my presentation I gave that recently, I just was at a quantum conference yesterday with people in healthcare talking about how they are using quantum and AI and trying to bring in blockchain with CT scanning. And that was kind of telling me of the, when you're trying to prepare healthcare industries and executives and CEOs, what we're doing is you kind of see how long it's been taking, even with blockchain, to get people on board and the education and understanding it. I think that's where the challenge has always been. And I think what we're doing now is really is more of awareness of you no longer can ignore this convergence of emerging tech, and especially with blockchain is I've talked to people and I think you guys have as well. You're still even educating them to this point after all this time, right? Of the value of it, where it fits, the use cases on it. And it's not going to slow down. If anything else, is speeding up. So how do we kind of create that insight, messaging, and easy to understand approach to decision makers in the hospitals that are the ones that need the buy-in, right? The users and everybody else, they get it right away. It's the executives that want to be bought in an easy way. We go, okay, that makes sense to me. I didn't have to really get too technical, but I understand the value fit. And now I really understand why blockchain has been so important and why I've been ignoring it.
Very good. Thank you, John.
No
How,
problem.
Mohan, you want to come back?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I think like my predictions were on supply chain as well as a few other things, right? So most of my predictions are based on experience, as I said. So in my past life, I was involved with supply chain and very interesting applications in the supply chain space of pharmaceuticals sprung up. For example, in back in 2020, during the COVID timeframe, blockchain came very handy when we built Trust Your Supplier, because Trust Your Supplier was a product that is still, that is operational in production in my previous engagements. Mm-hmm. And essentially it combined the trustworthiness of blockchain as well as the AI, and combined with IBM's e-commerce platform, it was enabling trustworthiness in the supply chain of pharma products, especially, you know, lotions and mm-hmm. other products. The way it did it is essentially lock in supplier trust on the blockchain based on data that is available publicly as well as provided by suppliers. And at the same time, it used AI to combine scores from different environments like EcoVadis for environment or you know, DNB. So it was combining AI plus blockchain in order to instill trust. And then, of course, you know, you fast forward, and as we were working, smart tags came in. Like smart tagging, like Zotag or Verinetics, they were able to create tags that were 3D, or they were sensitive to different temperatures, or they were IoT enabled. So one could actually see how products in the supply chain are impacted. For example, labels could change colors based on whether they were exposed to temperature or light, and therefore you know whether the product was handled properly or not. So this was another experiment we did in the supply chain space. But then when I take supply chain itself, it is two types of supply chains. One is the manufacturing supply chain, and then you have the whole patient lifecycle supply chain, meaning like a patient is also coming in for a service, and then that service is finally combined and you know, it delivered, and then there's a claim, and the claim is processed, and somebody is paid. So that we worked with insurance companies, and one of the largest companies that process accounts use both AI as well as blockchain. One of the issues in the industry is there are too many insurance companies, and patients are registered with many insurance companies. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. the ability to see this patient has how many different insurances? Can I have a unified view? Can we have a source of trust on the chain? And how can that source of trust be used for administering benefits? So that was a very good example of how the blockchain's trust and smart contracts came into play. And later on, combining that with how can you reduce the cost of claims? Now, fast forward to today, what I observe in the industry is now less on the, there's one more interesting thing that happened also, where blockchain made a big impact. For example, manufacturers produce products, and those products are consumed by hospitals and pharmacies. There is an intermediary always who is in place, who essentially has their own product. So essentially, you know, manufacturers publish their prices, and these prices are visible to this intermediary, and they act as the source for fulfilling purchase orders from hospitals or clinics. But what was happening is most often the intermediary was pushing their own products. Is there a better way by which blockchain can act as the intermediary, and then smart contracts come into play for business compliance? So that was a very interesting exercise. What we noted is that in order to get consensus among all the participants in the network is the most difficult thing. Mm-hmm. Now, combining to fast forwarding today, most of my focus in the prediction space has been on reducing the cost of claims, reducing the revenue cycle management, improving the accuracy by which a claim is prepared, and that it is using both. It is using AI and blockchain in two spaces. One is AI assets are treated as assets, and the blockchain acts as an asset lifecycle management. Essentially, AI assets have to be tracked, their versions, what input was used for training them, what outputs they create. So there's an asset lifecycle management. And at the bottom, there is a process itself where AI is embedded into the actual process. For example, determining what kind of ICD codes apply to this. Or for example, is the claim properly constructed? So we are looking at both these spaces. And I've been deeply engaged in this space, and I see this going forward. Legacy transformation is going to be a major application of blockchain plus AI, where one gives the trust and the other one actually improves the efficiency of the process.
Very nice, very nice. My sense was Why don't we continue this from a different perspective? Who wants to go next? Jim, you want to go next?
Yeah, I'm happy to. It's not exactly a segue from what Mohan was saying with supply
Sure.
chain, to be clear. Really, my thought for 26, if you like a prediction, overriding prediction, is that I believe decentralized science, if you like, is will become quite a thing. And I think that there was in 25, I think there was a significant, like really material, objective amount of progress in this space. And I think, you can measure it in a few different ways. In terms of adoption, or projects that are doing quote DeSci, adoption of various types of blockchain functions, such as the crypto rails in particular. For as a way of tokenization, incentivization, but then also I think, and more probably even more importantly, understanding where decentralized technologies as a whole really plays into science. And I think to me that this is really, this is really an interesting, it's kind of an interesting paradigm shift because I believe clinical research, science, clinical studies, and traditional science really has a lot of it's got some blind spots. As example, it could take a year plus before you can even get your kind of application really reviewed properly. The funding process. The traditional funding process is really opaque, at best opaque, and in many cases totally mysterious. You put an application into the NIH, 18 months later, you may or may not hear something. There may or may not be alternatives, and so I think many of these things, and actually a friend of mine on a different podcast kind of mentioned this idea of science as a contact sport. I think that for those of us, who do sports, that may resonate. It's a little bit dirty, and there's a lot of friction. There's quite a bit of bureaucracy, and honestly, in many cases, researchers, people who have really great ideas and a lot of kind of a lot of motivation to do certain kinds of studies may be really limited, by their specific institution and what the institution can do, the funding and what the funding process is and expertise in that, many other things. So I kind of feel like with decentralized science, many of those obstacles can actually and is already, really being addressed and can be overcome. As example, funding. So there's a number of kind of decentralized, I want to say funders, Research Hub is an example, Molecule is another example, where what their focus has been, was in 25, and I think that they're going to really benefit from this going forward, is really to make the funding transparent. So the funding is there. There's a token. A token, obviously, is available to be purchased on an exchange like a Coinbase. But it's pretty clear, on your protocol as you define it, it's pretty clear what your budget is. And then there are donors or funders. It could be individuals. It could be third parties. It could be NGOs. It could be charity. Really a mix. That they fund you, and you can kind of see, basically like a meter. It shows, I give you a very specific example because I'm actually doing this, so I don't want to make it abstract. So right now, we have a project on Research Hub. It's to look at the Wim Hof method, the cold exposure and the Wim Hof method breathing in particular, as a novel way of treating cancer. So all of that is, I'm sorry, was there a question?
No. Go ahead. Keep going.
So all of that is it's just an example. It's publicly available. It's in the public domain. You can go and see it. You can see the team. You can see their protocol. You can see our scientific methodology. You can see the timeline. You can see, what the control group and the patient group look like. You can see the budget, in detail. And you can also see the peer reviewers, and you can see like specific and all publicly done, and you can see the funders. So to me, that is a as an incredibly powerful like kind of step forward for science, because in my experience, having done various things, certainly in public health, that's really the exact opposite. And generally, it's taken a very long time. It's taken a lot of money, a lot of opacity, and many times just channeled to through like two or three big, kind of scientific institutions, and even less IRBs, much less than this kind of public and transparent thing. I will tell you, I think to me, there's a couple of additional areas in particular that decentralized science, I believe, really is going to accelerate with and improve, hopefully improve science in. I think one is in the general category of preclinical discoveries. I think they the general, kind of funding levels, maybe the full bureaucratic process, particularly the IRB for that, doesn't need to be at the same level as if you're developing a compound. So I think it there's a fit for purpose, and I've seen a number of pre-discovery projects there. I think these areas around, and somebody mentioned this, one of our panelists mentioned this, around longevity. I think longevity, there's a lot happening around that, and much of that, is tapping into actual individuals who are voluntarily providing data, and these are like new areas, and that there are a number of decentralized science projects around longevity. So I see that. I think that that's another area. And then I will tell you, I think functionally there's two really big areas that decentralized science, I think is really driving. One is around peer reviews. I think peer reviews is proven again. Research Hub is a good example that can be done way more transparently. Peer reviewers can be incentivized, but transparently incentivized, and the feedback can be a cycle between authors of a study and peer reviewers way more publicly. So to me, that is a really big step forward. The other thing is all to do with preprints. I think you can, in many ways, use a decentralized, like a public domain, release of your protocol as a way. It's kind of like a preprint, but then you're if you're using the decentralized technologies correctly, you're also memorializing your protocol. And if somebody said, well, you can just go and copy and paste it, there's actually some cryptographic proofing you're building in on how the protocol was developed, how it was reviewed. Anyway, I'm personally speaking, I'm pretty excited about this, because I feel like, honestly, from my perspective, having been in crypto for a very long time, since at least 10 years now, I feel like it's an industry where many, many, many solutions now are really quite derivative, and they're really just about like another example of moving money and token around without that much real utility. And I feel like, that's a first of all, that's a real, kind of like lowering of what the technology can do, and really making it like a caricature version of what it could be. But it also is an incredible potential loss, because we could do really good work, as example in science, with crypto if we can use it properly. So anyway, so that's kind of what I'm excited about, is decentralized science.
Very good, very good. So
I
where do
guess
we
I'll
go
jump.
next?
Yeah, I guess I'll jump in next.
Please.
Taking what we've done over the last few years and the way that we kind of look at this whole idea around digital identity, and the digital identity of the individual, the digital identity of the professional, and the digital identity of the organization. I think that's key, and I think blockchain, we've shown, and that's what I'm excited for in 26 is what does that platform related identity mean to solve some real world issues, and then how can we use AI once we've established that identity and that data that's associated with that identity, to create, causation impacts around healthcare. For instance, in India, we have a school project where we're data gathering basic healthcare information, creating what we refer to as a digital identity of that student. And, we look at it by by enabling blockchain, we're not bringing that data into a honeypot, but we're looking at that data like more like tributaries that are coming in and secure. And so then once we have that, what are some of the things that we can use AI, whether that's on early indications of a rare childhood disease, but also too in India, is there a causation impact between healthcare and fitness and the impact to educational performance, which is key for the kind of fundamental building blocks of the next India. And so, when I look at that, sometimes, we're kind of prudent, pragmatic folks that say, how can we use these building blocks? How can we use this and have impact in areas? For instance, post-COVID, we've seen the need to share resources, particularly in the healthcare space, where there's healthcare inequities, lack of access, and when we look at a region like LATAM, the ability to share those resources, but it all sounds well and good, but you have to be able to create a standard identity and credential that will be respected and guided by those those countries that want to recognize that. The importance of that is then as they're able to share resources across border, and moderator suggested about his background from the regulatory standpoint. I think what's also interesting in 26 is how do we get this regulatory environment right, and can blockchain play an important piece on that to be able to. I was having this conversation yesterday with some folks on a regulatory basis to say, how can we respect those individual jurisdictions at the same time being able to cross border, particularly around healthcare data or healthcare activity that's happening, because it's not going to be that strong arm of one of the big bullies that come in and say, this is how we have, but there's historical precedent of why those regulators in those particular countries view their data and those data walls in a certain way. We have to respect that. And I think, I think blockchain and eventually implementing AI around that allows us to respect those jurisdictions, create care that has no borders, and then use AI from a resource perspective to see where those gaps are as we look forward from a population health management standpoint, understand where those gaps are and take a more proactive approach to filling those gaps, looking at other regions or other countries that might have those resources available.
Very good, very good. Questions? Any questions as we go along? John, you want to jump in?
No, I mean, I think all of us are touching on the thing that, the roadblocks, right? I think Dersh was talking about, the regulatory things. And I'm always looking at, technology and emerging tech internationally. And I think we should always look at it that way, because everyone is using it in different ways to solve different problems. So when you kind of look at that and you look at this convergence of all the tech, we're talking about AI, right? We're talking about blockchain. We're talking about still this hard process of adopting blockchain in different areas, right? That's always the challenge now, is the adoption, right? How do we make it easy for them to understand it, right? And I kind of look at an example of like Cleveland Clinic. They've been in blockchain for a while, right? They have tokenizations around it. They've also been in AI extensively. And now they just added quantum, right? So they've been really innovative and focused on collaborating these emerging disruptive technologies, right, to make give access easily to people that want to be a part of that, right? And it's something that we're not used to seeing, right? A leader going out there going, we're going to adopt all three of these disruptive technologies and show you the way to how to leverage it the best way. So in essence, they're almost setting the standards, right, for others to follow them if they want to, right? So when we start working with regulators, they can give an example of, we've been doing this these past X, Y number of years. By the way, we've been reaching out internationally to other people to see how can we bring in their ideas into what we're doing. I think that's what it's taking of, like Dersh is saying, is how do you respect those boundaries, but and still include them, right? The inclusion part of understand what we're doing. We're being innovative. We're leveraging all this emerging tech. People are still nervous about AI. They still don't understand blockchain, right? And now quantum's around the corner, right? So now you have this overwhelming immersion of where do I start? And if someone has already started it, right? Like a big player like Cleveland Clinic going, oh, show me the success you've been having. Why is that working that way? How are you getting blockchain, AI, and quantum interact together? Where's the value in the use cases? And I think for us, we forget at times, we're in this circle every day, but we forget to tell those stories, right? That resonate with people on a different level of, here's an example of how they're using it in X, Y, and Z. And then it's like, oh, we're not just giving an example. Oh, hey, this is why the technology is so great. This is why AI works good here. Quantum just speeds it up. They're going, oh, here's the use case and the business value. And here's the impact on your users at the end of the day. Here's the value you're providing. And I think we need to sometimes gear it more towards that value of the user or the patient, right? And then work our way back going, your patients will get this. They'll get this value out of using you and your platform because you add this in there. And really it's kind of like, you can keep everything up behind the scenes. And I think as we navigate, you know, the education part, the adoption part, we have, a responsibility to go, how do we make it easy, right? How do we make it easy for them to adopt? How do we make it easy for them to understand? So you start throwing tokenization out to a patient, they're like, oh, that's great, right? There's friction. It's an incentive platform that's different, right? It's all how we're crafting it for them to understand that, right? Because people instantly will say, oh, that's just Bitcoin. And I still hear it to this day, which boggles my mind. Yeah. But it's showing them like, this is where we're still at. They still haven't had the basic understanding. Okay, let me switch the word around. Yeah, it's just really an incentive platform that you leverage that you're gonna own your data and your medical records on, but you own this. By the way, it just has to be leveraged by a technology called blockchain and a token they use. Oh, okay, that's different, right? Even for executives to have to explain it, or doctors, right? Where they're going out there and going up front with the patient of, you wanna use this incentive platform. You don't have to say, oh, it's a token thing they use by blockchain technology and it secures it and it's a mutable platform. It's like, it's just an incentive platform and it's just used through this way. And here's the value to you that you see instantly, right? And I think as we do that and we kind of see where 2026 is going, that messaging is going to be, I think, adopted more because a lot of people are so anxiety, is so burned out already with this emerging tech push on them of, I need to adopt this, I need to adopt that, I'm not up to speed on this, and I still don't understand these, right? And it's not slowing down. I mean, I think it's speeding up. And at times, I'm not going to lie, it scares me. So I'm always reaching out to people internationally like, hey, what are you doing in Sweden? What are you doing in Switzerland? What about in Italy? And I'm just asking questions of, oh, wow, I haven't heard that before. But it allows me to get a perspective of, okay, you guys are thinking about this differently. And if your messaging is great, I want to leverage some of that somehow as I'm talking to executives of, hey, let me tell you about what I heard they were doing down in Chile with this remote program using blockchain and AI. And now they're adding, you know, post-quantum cryptography on the back end to secure all their data to get ready for it. And then it's like, okay, well, tell me more, right? It's not about going too deep. And if saying, hey, I don't understand blockchain, you tell me that? Well, let me give an example who's been using that the past 5-6 years, right? Because I mean, I got into blockchain in 2017. And since then, you know, I've seen it just got fast and then it died out and then people got burned out. But now it's coming back around, which is phenomenal. But I'm remembering, okay, what was the friction the last time it came around? It was Bitcoin, because Bitcoin's all over the place. I was like, so let's tell them, yeah, that's part of it. But now look at all the value these hospitals have already gotten out of it. Now they see success, like, oh, now I should be a part of this. And I think we have an opportunity to kind of do that in 2026 as we move forward. And that's kind of been my focus and the excitement of even people I talk to here in Florida of all these healthcare systems that are down here.
Thank you. I completely agree with you, you know, that adoption is the key. So, I just want to say a few things, right? I'm actually a practical builder, so I'm not an executive. I'm actually an architect, designer, builder. And what I notice is, as you rightly pointed out, blockchain flunked. The very first project I did in IBM for asset track and trace, they did not engage others. It flunked. But the subsequent projects, when you get people to come together, then you try to show blockchain success. Now, coming back to the DID, decentralized identity, I'll give you a good example of combining blockchain and AI. We all competed in 2020 to build the wallet, the health wallet. And one of the things that I built in our health wallet, of course, you know, it was a hard sell because I was competing with big guys. In the COVID health wallet, we used DID as the identity for patients and doctors and nurses who did that. But we also combined AI because when a patient walks with the phone all over the country, the AI piece of that was, one is facial recognition of people. And the second part was, wherever they traveled, the geofence automatically looked at the last 14 days of where they were, and it tried to look and overlap it with areas where COVID was highly impacted and said, this person is potentially impacted or not impacted or whatever. So we combined that at that time. Now, even today, as we say, adoption is the key. So,
Mohan, just a question. I think, what lessons did we learn from that experience? I think because I think I'm looking at the trust that has been lost in the public health following all that. And as the congressional, the Senate investigations unfold, much of that will be looked upon in a very negative light. So how is that going to impact going forward? How do we rebuild trust? It was my question. I was going to come that as a round of questions.
So, you know, trust is in multiple ways, right? I mean, like, whether it's, I'm trying to build trust with enterprises. Essentially, most of the time, enterprises come to me, like, it's from a federal government perspective. I've done about a couple of projects for the U.S. Treasury, the tokenization of grants for various applications, whether it's healthcare or whatever it is. And one of the biggest issues, I'm just going back to the government, is government does POCs and pilots to figure out how to leverage the technology. One of the big projects I was involved with, where I was the architect, was for tokenization of government grants. Because what happens is all these grants were misused, and ultimately they did not get the result, as you said, the transparency. So tokenization helped in, and tokenization and wallets came into play, where the money was moved only if the results were seen from tier one to tier two to tier three until the whole project was complete. So I've seen projects in the federal government where, you know, they experiment with what can work and what cannot work. But I'm not deeply involved with the regulatory aspect. But from a commercial perspective, when we go to clients, we have to prove how trust is. So, for example, in some of the projects I'm doing, they want to see how blockchain can tell me auditably that the AI engine did not expose some of the data. So, for example, HIPAA compliancy. Now, I have to sign BAAs, business associate agreements, with OpenAI, with Gemini, for compliance, because we are oftentimes pushing in PHI and PII information, and they have to secure it. So that's very essential. One of the lessons I learned is you have to have BAA agreements with your partners, whether it is the OpenAI, whether it is the integration companies, or even the partners who supply you intermediaries, which is very important. Otherwise, you can expose patient information, and the penalties are very high. The other is, how do you secure this data on the blockchain, given the quantum computing? Do I put PHI on the blockchain, or do I put it outside? If I put it outside, how do I lock it in so that it is secure and we can trace? So auditability was very important for some, for my clients right now. Even in the past, I've built about 40 to 60 applications. Many of them are in production, right? Auditability, you have to have provable auditability with cryptographic signatures associated with it and proofs that can actually prove that you can audit this transaction. So that is something that I've constantly focused on when we build applications. And second is AI. What version of AI model are you using? What was the training data that was used for training that particular AI? And in the actual application, what request did you put in? What response did you get? And what was the context or the state of that machine at that point in time? Most of my trustworthiness leveraging blockchain plus AI has been educating customers and actually demonstrating this through POCs. And then I'm winning projects. So adoption is basically, I actually go and demonstrate how it works. I build their use case for free. And then when they understand how it is working, they're actually willing to engage. And so in 2026, I see adoption is going to be prove to them their use case, and they will say, build it for me.
Thank you. Thank you. Can we go around our virtual table and then ask that question? What do you see as the key opportunity and hurdle in 2026? I think the case studies and getting acceptance, overcoming trust issues. And because I think we have about 10 minutes left, I thought we'll just go in the circle and have that discussion. And how do we build trust? And what do we expect in 2026? Hurdle and opportunity.
I'll start real quick. I mean, I think, you know, we talk about this more. It's still this more of this education and awareness, right? And it's hard at times when everybody's in a rush. And I think as we're pushing forward, and we've been in this space, all of us, a number of years, it's now understanding, okay, it's continual, this awareness and education continually. Let me tell you why. Why is it, here's the value, right? And I think we forget that because I said, we're having constant conversations with people like us in a circle. But as soon as I step out and I talk to somebody who has no clue what's going on in the space, I got to remember, I need to take a step back all the time and go, let me prepare you and educate you. Let me, it's almost baby steps. And then speed up. Once, like you're saying, once you do the POC, then they're like, oh, I want to know more. Now they're curious. And I think we need to make them more curious of why they need to adopt this technology now and not just ignore it and saying, oh, it's all hype. It's like, no, let's make you more curious in an easy way that you want to be involved. You want to know, see an example of it. You want to see a use case. Or, hey, how can you talk? Let me talk to an expert that you know in this space. And I say, hey, reach out to Dersh. I know these guys are doing this. He's a perfect person you to align with, right? And then there's trust, right? You're giving him to an expert that's not just trying to hype something up. Like, hey, Dersh, I know, and his team, they're providing value. Here's what they've done. And they'll share their expertise with you. And that's the scary part, right? Because everybody's like, well, do you know what you're doing? Do you know actually this stuff? It's understanding who to direct people to at times of, you need to talk to these people here because they'll give you an example and customers that they have seen the value in it. I think that's where I see 2026 going, is more of this collaboration in that way.
Right.
Yeah, that's great, John. It's interesting. My take on opportunity, Ajaz, and also really the counterpart threat, mm-hmm. really is all to do with individuals using their agency on health data in a very, very big scale. I think bigger than anything we've seen. I think we've already seen this just even the last few weeks in how people are putting their health data onto ChatGPT, and even the fact that, you know, really out of almost nowhere, there's ChatGPT Health and there's Claude Health. To me, that's an incredible opportunity because I feel like for many, many years, you know, for a lot of us, maybe all of us here on this panel, we have been trying to do things that ultimately are impacted by consumer behavior. And the consumer behavior, the user behavior, that change of inertia just wasn't there. Even though, you know, like for instance, with the Cures Act for 10 years now, legally, we, you know, patients could have downloaded the health data and shared it with whoever and really kind of use their agency. That really had not happened. However, I think there's a lot of data to back this up, that this is actually happening. It's happening at like very, very rapid scale right now. And John, to your point a little bit earlier, it's happening internationally. This is not a local phenomenon. This is not just like, well, people in New York City and San Francisco are doing it. It's way more than that. It's way more pervasive. And so to me, that I think actually for all of us, I'm a builder also, like Mohan was describing and Michael, that is actually kind of like, wow, we're finally seeing a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, because it's great to build things, but if nobody really ultimately is affecting behavior, you're not getting the so what. You're not really, suddenly economically, you're not answering that. So I feel like that's great. However, I think that the threat, you know, and the counterpart threat and I think why decentralized technologies, blockchain really play in is, can we do this safely? Can you do safe AI? And it's more than just a reductive thing of like HIPAA. Like, it's way more than just, you know, we can have privacy preserving. I think so much of what can happen, like this, the law of unintended consequences with AI is bias creation. Is profiling. I think we're seeing this in other parts of our society right now. Yeah, I'm not going to get into it, but I think those are hidden things. And if and the real threat is that health data becomes the playpen of, it essentially becomes central health AI. So a couple of companies, ChatGPT, Gemini, like the usual suspects with hundreds of billions of dollars in investments in infrastructure. And to me, that would be inc that's an incredibly scary thing, is us using our agency to get some value, but then inadvertently making three or four, tech billionaires like really gods on health and our individual privacy and many, many other things. I mean, people are putting their genomic data sequences openly onto ChatGPT. Those are not like, I mean, I don't think we're anywhere near like proving safe AI at the minute by doing these kind of things. So opportunity and threat.
Thank you.
So
Give the last word, Michael.
okay. Thank you. I always like having the last word. I'd like to pivot a little bit, with my last prediction. We've talked about healthcare data, integrity, regulation, all that stuff. I'd like to pivot over to payments and using digital assets, stable coins, staking coin, and how we do that. We've looked at those use cases now for years. With our background in clinical trial and just cross-border payments in healthcare and how that works and the total dysfunction around that, whether it be exchange rate risk, currency risk, SWIFT costs, lack of transparency, all that stuff, right? And we've been preaching from the top of the mountain that this is we need to adopt that. And so my prediction is finally, with the US coming around a bit from a regulatory standpoint, when you look at the public offering of Circle and you look at that, what John was saying, how do we demystify this stuff? How do we give it credibility? The momentum that we have now with our use case of an insurance company in Bermuda, health insurance company, sending to an affiliated payment mechanism in Toronto to then have last mile, but that tranche that they work with now, where they have multiple general ledgers that they have teams trying to find any type of audit trail that they can do on it. And now the CEO has trust in this more so concept. It is deployable. We can see it. We have regulatory environment around it now. And so that CXO suite who has had this issue, whether it be cost, lack of transparency, not being able to get any treasury services on it, any of those types of things, or timing in clinical trials, which might be from the day that investigator does it till 90 days of payment. That's a boatload of risk for CROs and CMOs. And I think this, now that we have some at least more clarity in the US and around the globe around this, we have adoption and we have major companies that are not going away, gives us all credibility now to insert that in these use cases where we've been talking to these stakeholders for years and they're saying, Dersh, now I'm ready. So that's another piece of what I'm excited about for 26. And we, like I said, we've been preaching about it. And now, again, back to John's point, that some of this stuff has given us, given that CXO suite, the legitimacy of it so that they're not out there like Wile E. Coyote hanging off a cliff, we're in this together. So that's my last point.
Thank you so much. I just came into this session just with my head they flew or something. I don't know what I caught yesterday, but shoveling the snow has been very difficult for us. Getting old, that's what it is. But thank you so much. I think this has gone better than I had expected. And any last minute, last topic, the burning issue that we didn't cover, let's go around quickly. And if there's any other topic that should have been mentioned but we didn't mention, and we'll wrap it up from there.
Sure. I think very good point, Darsh. But one thing I do see is plenty of opportunity in the US because pharmaceutical companies are being requested to manufacture in America. So we see supply chain in the US changing drastically with local suppliers and then vetting of supplier, international suppliers who provide all these first-tier ingredients. So that whole supply chain is going to change. That's what I think. So from a supply chain perspective, I do see
Mohan, could I
opportunities.
add something there? Because you're
Yeah.
absolutely right. And I think I'm looking at a couple of investigations, US Senate investigations on supply chain and other aspect, the quality of imported and the quality of domestic supply is likely to be different and need to be traced as different. And
Yes.
that is going to be a major topic, and blockchain and other aspects really come into play very much so there. I think that's the opportunity I see.
Absolutely. I was doing a project for a company, very well-known company at one time, that makes nutraceuticals, which is basically vitamin A's, and they wanted to trace the provenance of all those ingredients that make that vitamin A. Some of them are coming from animals, and some of them are coming from plants, and people who consume them. So I'm seeing supply chain traceability, provenance is going to become a major issue in
Agreed.
addition to improving AI, using AI for improving legacy processes and transforming them into more efficient things. But
And really, where I think it needs to go is, I'm just going to use the term digital twin for a pharmaceutical and a digital twin for a patient. They have to come together
yeah.
because the causal intervention is the pharmaceutical, and if that doesn't is not authentic, how the hell do we get the healthcare out of that becomes a key question.
Right.